For MePoultry.com, I'm Erica Schaefer, Digital Media Senior Editor. The internet has gained prominence as the shopping channel of choice for consumers that are spending more time at home and less time out and about due to coronavirus concerns and related business closures. The food industry has taken notice. In August, the NPD Group reported that, before the pandemic, 19% of Americans said they purchased edible groceries online in the past 3 months. The percentage more than doubled to 40% in May. Disruptions in the traditional meat supply chain and shifting patterns in both where consumers eat and how they're getting meals these days has accelerated growth in the channel that would have taken another 5 years to achieve, according to NPD. At the intersection of these shifting patterns are companies such as CrowdCow, an online marketplace for high-quality meat, poultry, seafood, and organic products. Meat and Poultry first heard of CrowdCow about 5 years ago. Back then, the business model was simple enough. Co-founders Ethan Lowry and Joe Heitzberg crowdfunded a cow by charging 50 people or so money to buy cuts of beef directly from the producer via the internet. CrowdCow started with two longtime friends offering their customers sustainability, transparency, and origin stories combined with the convenience of the internet. But in this episode of the Meat and Poultry podcast, Heitzberg explains why he believes online sales of fresh meat, poultry, and other foods have jumped from niche to the new normal because of the pandemic and maybe the lasting impact of a music sharing service called Napster.
Yeah, well, it started out with a really, really big idea and a really, really small idea, meaning we knew very early, at the very instance of the idea stage, that there's a big opportunity here. You know, it was the epiphany of a very small example, you know, a friend, a mutual friend of my co-founder and I, who was going to a small island near Seattle where they raised some cattle. He knew the farmer, you know, and he was bragging about how good it tastes and how honored he felt to be connected to that person and their family who took care of every animal. And, you know, they settled the land and they took care of the land. It's sustainable. There's no pesticides ever on the grass and it's just beautiful. And I'm kind of supporting that so it can stay that way forever. And it's beautiful and it tastes better. And it was the jealousy of not being able to get that meat, you know, he wouldn't share. And then also troubled by the effort he had gone to get that better experience and connection and meat, which was, you know, driving a truck out there and having a giant meat freezer. And it was like the insanity of going to that level of trouble to get something a little better because it's important to people. But that wasn't enough. It was more the talking about that out loud with my co-founder and saying, yeah, why is it in the grocery store, the meat counter's a very foreboding place? It's very boring. There's no branding. The labels are pretty confusing to consumers. You know, the shenanigans going on there that, you know, it's a fun thing to go to Whole Foods and ask them, what is level 4 exactly? And the look on the person's face behind the meat counter, like, oh my God, you're not supposed to ask me what it means.
Even at Whole Foods.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Everywhere. I mean, really, if you drill in past the marketing buzz, very few people in the stores can answer any of the questions or really know. And if you really press, they're just as likely to make up an answer as to just say, I don't know. And far more likely for those two things than to actually get it right. And it's like, that's my experience. But further is just like the product. It's price per pound is the emphasis. Cut mm-hmm. name, price per pound. It's like very boring. The irony is you've walked by the beer aisle and that selection to get to the meat counter, where if you're old enough, like I am, you remember your parents, you know, generation only drank 2 or 3 beers and you kind of aligned your whole life with those brands. And True. There was no such thing as microbrew and there wasn't brew pubs and there wasn't, that's it. And that beer aisle in the grocery store is amazing because you've got stuff from your local town and you've got stuff from around the world and every flavor and price point and tradition and story. And it's just, as a consumer, it's much more rewarding, gratifying, and tasty. You know a lot more about the products if you're into nutrition or this and that. This one donates 10 cents of every bottle to that, and blah, this one uses this kind of whatever. You know, you feel like your dollars are, you're in control. I'm going to spend my dollars on this one because I believe in that, you know.
Okay.
Meat counter, forget it. Meat counter's still stuck back in the old world, you know, 30 years ago, where you have none of that. It's like Wonder Bread. Why do you need more than Wonder Bread? Well, if you don't know that there's other breads, then you don't. But once you discover there's all these traditions and all these things, that's, you're never going back. Happened with coffee. It's happening now with cheese and chocolate and a lot of other categories. So we felt like, so the small idea was just like, maybe we can get a cow, put it on a webpage and have a video of the farmer and let people get that direct connect experience, but the convenience of online ordering. And the big idea was, maybe there's a multi-billion dollar opportunity to change a big part of the industry. And if you look into meat, it's the center of the plate. It's more central to your health. It's center of the grocery store and profit. It's big and important in every way you look at it, sustainability and issues going on with the environment. Mm-hmm. and food systems. It's like, wow, meat really shouldn't be behind the times. It's going to be radically changed. And maybe we can play a part in that one way or the other. Feels like a land of opportunity and a real fun adventure to go try. So we got started with the small idea of like, you know, we'll crowdfund, we'll literally sell a single cow worth of beef to our friends and just take one foot after the other after that to figure out, you know, as we learn, because we're not beef guys and, you know, but if we just get, if you get something started and there's momentum and consumers are driving that momentum and you just keep going, you know, in my experience, you often find before you know it, you're like, wow, look how far we've come. Mm-hmm. Frankly, one of the reasons we thought, even though we are just two guys just starting, you know, and this is a big established industry, that we'd have a chance at it was because we're internet people. So in the grocery store, no matter how hard you try, even if you brought in people who really understand branding and want to do and are really good at it, you just don't have people's attention. You know, you're pushing a shopping cart, mm-hmm. A five-year-old's tugging at your arm, you have a huge shopping list, and you know, everyone's just fighting to catch a little bit of your eye with a little orange sticker that says special. And it's hard to actually be special in that environment. Whereas online, you know, in the studies, there's actually scientists who study this stuff, but the amount of useful and deep information you can consume sitting on your couch with your iPhone flicking one thumb, mm-hmm. is something like 1,000 times more than, you know, in an environment of a grocery store. So you're consuming, you know, 10 seconds of a video, and then you swipe back and you scroll down and you read something and you click a thing, and now you're on Instagram and you're scrolling through tons of pictures. And in a very short period of time, you can get like, oh wow, you know, now I know what a heritage pork is. I want to try it. And once you've tasted it, you're never going back to the grocery store pork. So it's those sort of patterns that we thought are ideally suited for online to capture people, and over time get more and more people aboard that new way and better way.
So is there a difference between internet people and the price conscious shopper, which I think some in the industry would argue those are the folks who need them the most, who you know, need those boring refrigerated cases of meats? They're not necessarily looking for attributes, yeah. or an experience. Yeah. They're looking for what they can afford.
Yeah, I'll tell you there is a difference, but I also tell you where it's, what's, how it's going to play out. You know, I don't know if you remember in 1998 or whatever, when Napster came around, and it was,
yeah.
like, you know, you had to be a renegade and a teenager and very tech savvy, and you were stealing from the industry, and it was small but concerning. And then it was suddenly like big time lawsuits. And then it was like, And eventually it was like Spotify, but that'll never be blah, blah, blah. And now it's like just taken for granted. The internet companies doing music are much bigger and they control the whole thing versus mm-hmm. the old regime that was too big to fail and too big to disrupt and too entrenched to, you know, our habits and our minds. Well, guess what? Over 10 or 15 years, it completely changed and we're all there now. Yep. And you can go back and read articles where people said it would never happen.
Sure.
And I think that that's happened over and over again in so many industries that for me, it's a foregone conclusion. It will happen here too. It's just a matter of time. And the reason is because that's what consumers want. It is better to have an experience, not just a purchase. It is better to feel like every time I spend my money or swipe my card or, you know, it scans my retina that like I am voting for how I think it should be done or I am getting, you know, better taste or whatever. So, you know, for the early adopters, that's worth paying more and going to some trouble that it's early and it's inconvenient. But mm-hmm. over time, as it gets more to more scale and becomes more convenient, then it becomes just better in every way, price better and experience better. Mm-hmm. So I think we've had massive inroads in that. I mean, if you looked at our first year and a half, it was just beef. And then we had other things. It was all extremely premium. Fast forward to today, we have a large and growing assortment of what I would call staples, where we very deliberately try to get the take price off the table with grocery, not discount grocery, but, you know, grocery where it's like an organic buyer.
Or, okay.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so we want you to know, the customer, that like Crowd Cow is not a place just for like craft meat, single origin premium, but like your kids are home every day now because they're not going to school. And you're not going to work, so you're home cooking more. We've got you covered. Whatever was on your like, honey, I'm going to the grocery store. What do you need me to pick up? Whatever the answer to that question is in the meat department, we have it and the price is unbeatable and it's going to be better because you'll know more about it. It'll taste better. It's vetted. You've got the whole story and the whole experience and the convenience of online delivery. And so that's kind of where we're at now, right now as a company.
So, you know, even though supermarkets are still a primary channel for consumers to buy fresh meat and poultry, mm-hmm. yeah. has the pandemic changed that dynamic forever?
I think so. I mean, certainly what we saw, obviously, in, you know, March, April, May, was like our customers were handholding their parents on how to sign up for Crowd Cow. Because you couldn't, they didn't want their parents going to the store and getting infected if you're older. And nobody wanted to go and get infected at the store where everything's trading hands and touching and you don't know who's touched it. And this is a much cleaner, safer way to purchase meat. And not only that, but you had the meat shortages coming out of the large meat plants, which exposed, you know, well, gee, that's not, what's wrong? You know, what's wrong with our meat food system if that's even possible to happen? And why is Crowd Cow still shipping meat? Because we work with small and independent farms and many processors. So it was like, that's the stuff that goes to farm to table restaurants. Mm-hmm. So those restaurants are closed. We've got it on our website. We're open for business. So a lot of people found like, oh, wow, the current big system is vulnerable and I don't want to go to the grocery. So I'll give this online thing a try, you know, and I'll teach my parents how to do it. And so that was our chance to audition a lot of people for this better way. And you know, to the extent we're delivering on the price and value, they're here to stay, you know? Mm-hmm. So we did see that acceleration. And people I've talked to in industry have literally described it as like, without naming names, I talked to one executive at one of the biggest companies. And he said, COVID has basically accelerated all the online stuff we needed to be doing by 5 years. So all of our 2022, 2023 should already be done now. Like why, you know, we're behind. That's how we feel that has happened. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I think it is a permanent shift. You know, people aren't going back to school. People aren't going back to work. So that's a lot of, it's a lot of food. That's a lot of meals now being cooked at home.
Mm-hmm. So I raised this question because you're working with Maiden Marketing to learn more about the online meat shopper. Can you divulge any preliminary insights or is there anything in this journey that is surprising you? Anything new that you're learning or is it pretty much confirming what you already know?
Mine is great because, you know, I mentioned earlier that the idea of a bridge, you know, we serve an online consumer only, and we don't work with retail yet, but in our vision, we would, because all the things we do offering, you know, the assortments that you can't get at stores and the convenience of online delivery, those capabilities, those should be available to customers, not just on our website, but at their local grocery. Why not? I mean, our supply chain's getting to a size where we'd be able to offer incremental interesting things to many grocery stores. And we'd be able to offer or plug into this click and collect or online delivery mechanic that they all desperately need to have now in a new world. So for us, you know, I reached out to Might and long before COVID, but the idea was like, you know, these guys clearly focus and work with enabling the retail world. You know, it's a different world, but it's the same customer in many cases. Mm-hmm. I want to understand that angle of it and see if we're useful to them. Is there a partnership, you know? And what, so I went out to Chicago and met them. And it was, what I heard from them was interesting, was like, because we have so much information about our customers, you know, I could right now, I could go to our admin tool and I could literally find somebody who's on our website right now. And I mm-hmm. could call them on the phone and just talk to them. Hey, I noticed you're on the chicken page. Can I help you? You know, we, and it's like, they can't do that. It's the people with the products hand it to distributors who hand it to the store. The store doesn't even know who the customer is in most cases. You know?
Okay.
Right. I mean, they have the data about what's purchased in the credit card and they have the loyalty programs, but they don't have the data we have, I think.
Well, but do consumers want you to have that level of data on a broader scale? I mean, I assume that folks who are engaging your website are okay with you calling them up while they're on the website. No, I mean, I don't know how other people would feel about that.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. I mean, if you're not a customer and you just heard me say that, like, that could be creepy. And that's not what I mean. What I mean is the way we use it is somebody the other day logged in and purchased a few thousand dollars worth of gift boxes and sent them off. You know, so we want to help that person have the best possible gift experience. Hey, can we, you know, reach out to that person and offer to put handwritten notes in all those boxes? And, you know, can we get feedback from them on how that gifting experience was? Because we think gifting is going to be really big this year for us. Mm-hmm. So what my point was, just like, I'm able to do that as the merchant. My relationship with the customer is intimate. Mm-hmm. They know us and we know them. And if we can use that information to personalize the experience or make it better, that's something we can do. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, the relationship between the customer and the merchant, the offline world, is just very disconnected. So Mitem was really interested in, like, A, we've got an online consumer that may be demographically distinct from the offline consumer. You know, are these people who are more gravitating to online purchases, are they different somehow? And what does that mean for the retailers? And then secondly, like, because you have better information and access to these and relationship with these customers, can we, therefore we can do survey stuff with them, opt-in survey stuff, where we'd be able to learn stuff much at a much deeper level than you could. It's just hard to orchestrate in a grocery store setting, or more quickly. Like, you know, we get feedback on a new product launch in, you know, minutes, because it's right there and it's digital and it's real time. And so it's powerful. I think they kind of said that's powerful. I was like, take it for granted because I'm an online guy, you know, but that was interesting. So the basis of the partnership was, can we collaborate in those ways? I think some of the insights have been like, you know, I'm really curious to know how is it changing the grocer strategy regarding online, and how is it changing what things are sold, how are they bundled, size of packages sold, and things like that. Because I think those kind of trends would be useful for us too. I mean, if it's working there, it'll probably work here, you know, in some ways, some of that stuff. Other insights that have been useful, just, you know, they're much more tapped in via that supply chain to what's going on in the big supply chain. So mm-hmm. it's always helpful to know, like, oh, I think their rumor is more, there's more cluster infections coming. So maybe we ought to, you know, source more meat because we think more demand's on the way, in that kind of thing.
Okay. So, and given that you have, you know, such intimate knowledge of your consumer, what are you learning about what products are selling the best right now, you know, now that we're in the pandemic compared to, you know, pre-pandemic times? Has there been a shift?
Yeah, definitely. The staples are happening a lot more. And those are the, you know, cuts that are tried and true and well understood in terms of how to cook and versatile with regard to recipes. So, you know, ground beef, chicken breast, those kinds of essential things, but also premium cuts like filet mignon and going up into like even premium steaks. You know, our theory being with restaurants closed or in limited capacity and safety still, you know, on people's minds going out to eat, people are wanting to have that restaurant experience at home, and they have got fatigue with home cooking. So one way to overcome those two things is just have some premium, you know, meat. Doesn't need much, just needs a little salt, and it's like a gourmet meal. And so we're seeing a lot of that plus those staples. Portion sizes have also increased. I think, you know, people, the larger family sized packs. So portion sizes are the same, but the packs, the bundles are getting bigger. Mm-hmm.
And how are you encouraging people to experiment? Are they more willing to experiment with different cuts and kinds of meat now that they're at home?
I think so. I think there's fatigue building around, like, you know, certain meals. We're trying to offer more in the breakfast category because that's one where it's totally new to people. People are eating breakfast at home a lot more than they used to. Mm-hmm. You got the time to eat right, and it's an important meal. But, you know, 2 months of scrambled eggs and you get pretty bored. So what can we offer that's convenient and easy and budget-wise friendly that'll fit the breakfast meal? And the next one, I think, is now that kids aren't running around with their friends in the neighborhood and they're not going back to school, oh my gosh, what are we going to feed them that's delicious and convenient? Or that they can cook themselves, you know? Mm-hmm. Can't be mac and cheese every day, can it? So we have to hit the price point and the convenience and the recipe set so that even a kid could cook it, kind of a thing. That's another big one. Mm-hmm. Seafood's been an interesting one for us. We've seen a lot of seafood demand, and I think that's mm-hmm. partly because restaurants are closed and you eat more seafood at restaurants, but partly because people are at home and you become more health conscious, I think, when you're mm-hmm. at home a lot, and mm-hmm. seafood's healthy and delicious, and it inherently has a lot of variety to it. So we've rotated lots of new and interesting seafood, and we can use the communication medium of web and video to take something that maybe someone's not heard of, like wolffish or kokachi, and we can, in a very quick video, you know, in a couple of pictures, we can tell you, like, haven't heard of wolffish, but like, this is amazing for breakfast. Like, just put it in a pan, salt, pepper, butter, and like, perfect, you know. It's not mm-hmm. fishy, there's no bones, you know, and just that level of explanation is enough to get people to say, yeah, cool, try it. Oh, cool. People love discovering new things, mm-hmm. and we can help them with that discovery.
That's the show for this week. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give it a like and leave us a review, as it helps support the program. You can stay social with us by searching at Meat Poultry on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. While you're there, give us a like and a follow. And for more stories from the meat and poultry processing industry, head over to meatpoultry.com. I'm Erica Schaefer. Thanks for listening.